Hello, and welcome to another episode of Shipping and Handling. I'm your host, Jennifer Rudden.
And I'm your co-host, Bridget Smith.
So we had originally recorded a version of this episode a couple weeks ago after we did our last book club episode, but due to technical difficulties, we had to delete that one because it got really garbled and weird.
Yes, alas.
And then the 15 minutes that were salvageable, we were pretty drunk, so we're going to try this again.
You are going to miss that wonderful moment when the champagne Jen brought exploded all over my office.
Exploded.
It was that she hadn't even, she was like unscrewing the little metal thing that holds
the
bonnet,
cork in. Yeah.
And it just like popped off. The cork flew across the room,
There's
hit my
still
ceiling.
A little dent in the ceiling.
It was very dramatic.
It was an adventure.
Fortunately, my office does not smell of wine, so.
Today just smells like the noodles that I brought in and had for lunch, so, yeah. So one of the things we wanted to talk about, we had attempted to frame this as sort of a reaction to, as sort of like a tag to the Raven Boys conversation.
Yes.
But I think that didn't entirely work.
It sort of started that way. We realized that we talked for the Raven Boys about 45 minutes and still did not get to all of the things that we actually wanted to say about it.
Well, do you want to talk a little bit about the gayness before
sure,
we dive into fan entitlement? Fan-titlement, if you will. Ooh, episode title. Yes!
Excellent. Puns! I love it.
It's also like 3 p.m. and we're both a little bit sort of Friday silly. So.
Yeah, we're just loopy. I just opened the bottle of wine in case you didn't hear that.
As opposed to starting our second bottle,
yes.
Which is what we did last time.
And I've already knocked over the microphone, used the word cockeyed, which Jen laughed at.
Cockeyed.
And there goes my phone.
So one of the things that we did not talk about in the last Raven Boys episode, or in our only Raven Boys episode, I guess, is the gayness about how Adam and Ronan end up
together. Yes.
I don't know why I just made
very
this. Sorry.
They can't see.
They can't. I'm so tired. Yeah,
this
I think
it's
pretty much
an interesting episode.
Like, I think that's pretty much all I have to say. It's like, it's charming. I love it.
Yeah.
OTP.
It was really endearing. It was very cool to sort of watch it unfold, which I think is part of why it was the whole fan entitlement thing, where a lot of people wanted to know if they were going to get together before the fourth book came out.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I totally get that feeling.
I
course
get the feeling.
Know.
I think it's a wrong feeling.
Yeah.
You know.
But, like,
it wasn't a wrong feeling to want to know, but it's wrong to pester the author on Twitter about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that the way that she did it was really good. And I thought that it was really nice that, you know, the whole, you know, Adam's whole, you know, quest to become an Aglianby kid, you know, sort of started when he saw sort of a Ronan lookalike. It's like, do I want to do him or be him? So canon bisexual Adam Parrish.
Yes.
Because that was the other thing that I liked, you know, it wasn't sort of suddenly like, oh no, I like penis to the exclusion of all other things.
No.
Like, he did genuinely, you know, care for Blue.
Yeah. And I think that was also sort of an interesting way to explore the way I think a lot of people come to bisexuality, where, like, you know that you like the people that the primary culture is telling you should like. And you're like, okay, great, that's fine. And then sort of you
oh, no, he's hot.
I have these feelings for other people, too.
Shit.
Something has changed.
Oh, shit. What do I do?
I also did really like that his whole question when he's considering, like, he's like, I really want to make out with Ronan. Should I, or is that a terrible idea? And it was sort of like, I could destroy him, and that would be really bad for all of us. Like, I could do that, and I don't want to do that. Help! It was like, oh, Adam. You're adorable.
I know. And then, so, she's talking about writing, like, a new trilogy that's, like, Ronan-centered, and I'm just like, but will Adam be there? Well, we have the continuing bi-ventures of Adam Parrish and Ronan across the dimensions. I swear to God, we're not drunk or high, guys.
No, nope.
We're just loopy.
Apparently, yep.
High five. Good job, team. I thought it was really nice that relationship. No one gets to be happy in this cruel world.
And that one, I I don't know. She does pining very well.
And she does. Like, you know, you know that's my favorite.
I know.
You know that's my favorite.
I just reread Anne of the Island, and I'm like, oh, all the feelings that no one
is this where I confess that I've never read any of those books?
Oh, my God. They're so good. They're, I mean, it's, I don't know if you would love them or hate them.
Uh-oh. She's giving me a very quizzical look right now. You can't actually see it.
I mean, it's like there are some things where I'm like, Jen, you need to read this. You will love it. Mm-hmm. And then, but I'm not sure about these.
A challenge. I'll take it.
But, you know, I read them over and over and over again when I was a kid, and so they were very formative for me.
Ah, yes.
And, you know, there's a whole 3-book arc of, like, enemies to friends to lovers,
it's my favorite.
I know.
I hate you.
And there are so many feelings.
I hate you. Oh, wait, you're not terrible. Oh, fuck, I love you.
Yes.
Fuck.
It's the best. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm, like, very much on
board.
Is that
Gilbert?
Pining. Yes.
Blythe.
Gilbert Blythe, my dream man.
All I've seen are, like, the gift sets on Tumblr of, like, the TV adaptations. Mm.
I watched that once because my mom was obsessed with it. And she was like, you need to watch it, Matthew. I was like, okay, mommy.
Yeah, no, I haven't read them all. I'll add it. But yeah, Maggie Stiefvater does pining very well.
Yes. Yes, she does. And so it's... my problem is that I like pining so much, I don't want to know anything about what happens after they get together.
Oh, but there's so much more terrible things that can happen after a couple gets together. So many juicy misunderstandings.
It's true.
So many missed messages.
Oh, God. And those two are not going to be able to talk to each other at all.
It's going
to
be so great.
Like, let's put two people who are incapable of talking about their feelings or acknowledging that they have them.
The most emotionally constipated young men in the country.
But, like, in completely different ways, so they can't even, like, look at each other and be like, I know how this is.
Their angst isn't even compatible in that way. It's not. Bless. Bless their hearts.
Yes.
Well, I think that kind of concludes our...
That concludes it.
It's like, we approve.
Yay, we approve.
Two boys kissing.
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up. which is not at all a good segue into what we really meant to talk about this episode, which is fan-titlement.
Yes.
Title.
Well, the reason it's sort of, like, tied into this originally is because there was a year and a half between Blue Lily, Lily Blue and The Raven King.
Which is really not even that long.
No, it's not. But the first three came out a year apart each, so...
A year and a half, though?
I know. Mean, an extra 6 months.
No, what are we going to do? Sorry.
So, so a lot of people were pestering Maggie Stiefvater on Twitter about whether they were going to get together, whether Adam actually liked boys, and she was like, I can't... That's a spoiler. There were a lot of people who were like, but that, how can someone's sexual orientation be a spoiler? Like, it's how they are.
It's like, well, they're fictional.
They're fictional.
So it's like, first of all, they're not real.
Yes. Like, if I tell you this...
It's not like outing a real person. No. It's like a fictional fucking character.
Yes.
And in this case, their sexuality is plot.
Yes. That's her whole point was like, this is a book about characters and feelings. Basically acknowledging any of those things would clarify a little bit about what the next book was going, what was going to happen in the next book. Yeah. So I think that she was correct in that. And also people kept pestering her about this. And I was like, we don't get to know before Adam does.
Yeah.
We don't even know at this point if he likes boys.
Calm.
We don't know if he knows.
Calm
so
down.
Like, let him figure it out and we will see it him. We will go on that journey with him. It'll be great.
It's not the destination, it's the journey.
Yes.
And you know, that's sort of like a pretty mild example of the stuff that, you know, we've been seeing a lot of recently. I think that the two examples that came to mind, and one of them actually I was kind of glad that we had to re-record because there was a really particularly egregious example that happened a couple weeks ago. The first one that we talked about last time, well, that we talked about in the episode that you'll never hear.
Yes. Ghost episode.
Was basically responding to an article in Vox by Aja Romano about there was this sort of thing that happened where Mark Gatiss, who's one of the writers of the Sherlock Holmes show, or Sherlock.
Sherlock.
Sherlock, yeah.
The Sherlock Holmes show is way too, that's like half of them.
The Sherlock Holmes show, it sounds like it's a talk show.
I would watch that, though.
He just, like, has guests on to insult them.
Yes, I would totally watch that.
Me too. And John's, like, his long-suffering band leader, just like, you're such an asshole, stop being mean to Bon Jovi. Quote of the episode right there. I'm having my first sip of wine.
Yes, who knows where this is gonna go? It could go anywhere.
Oh my god. So yeah, so someone tweeted at him and was basically like, if John and Sherlock don't get together in season 4, I'm just gonna die. And he replied, R.I.P. Which I think...
That's like, a little flippant.
It's like a little flippant, but also, like, you know, imagine the, you know...
The, like, onslaught.
The people. Onslaught. And also, like, you know, there's all those awkward press things where people keep, like, reading the fan fiction
god.
To them.
Don't
and, like,
do that!
I know.
It's don't force creators to acknowledge fan fiction. I thought this was the rule.
But this is sort of like what I wanted to talk about. That rule seems to be changing, and I don't think I like it.
No. We like had fandom is like a little playground where we all play on things that the creators built, and the people who built the playground don't need to like interact with us in any way.
Yeah, this sort of need to have like that kind of creator. So this all sort of ties back to something that there is like a genuine conspiracy of people who think that like Sherlock and John are endgame on the show, and that there's like a literal vast conspiracy to like keep people from knowing this.
Yeah,
which doesn't make any fucking
sense.
And you know. But then the other example that that happened a couple weeks ago was, I don't watch Steven Universe.
Neither do I, which means I feel like we are only marginally equipped to discuss this.
But, you know, something happened on Steven Universe, which is a literal children's show.
Yes.
That, you know, from the way people talk about it, it's just like the gayest show ever. It's like, you know, all kinds of queer characters, like all over the place.
And queer creators,
which is a key thing. Yeah. So two of the characters, I guess, got together, but it wasn't the two characters that, like, a very vocal, like, portion of the fan base wanted to get together.
Yeah.
So they literally hounded one of the creators off the internet, accusing her of queer baiting, which I was just like, what?
And, like, this
Oh, my God, look at this. Sorry.
Don't shriek into the microphone.
That incredibly shrill sound I just made my computer very upset.
And from what I understand, this writer is a lesbian herself. They've written, like, multiple queer relationships on the show. It's not like they're teasing people and being like, oh, maybe we will pretend that this is going to happen, but it's never going to happen. They're just like,
it's also a children's show, so it's not like they're, like, fucking on the screen, you know? But people were very upset, and they literally hounded her off of Twitter.
Yeah.
They hounded her off the internet.
Oh, it's never a good sign.
Because something that they wanted to happen in the
show.
Like,
you know what we're going to do? We're going to harass this queer woman off of the internet. That seems like we are really in the right there.
Yeah.
Well, if that's what you're doing.
And I don't know. I mean, do you think it's just like the youths? Like, who do you think is doing? Like, what do you think it is about our culture now that people feel like it's okay to kind of like have this? Because I feel like we all sort of felt ownership over the things that we loved, you know, the things we wrote fanfic for. And,
oh, yeah.
But, like...
And, like, I mean, I'm glad that J.K. Rowling was not... Twitter did not exist during the whole...
Oh, thank God.
Harry Hermione versus Ron Hermione thing.
Oh,
that
God.
Would have been really
Remember when that was a fight we were having?
Yes.
Apparently, that's a fight that some corners of the internet are still having.
Of course they are.
Bless.
But I really do think that a lot of it is... the appearance of access to the people who are creating these things. And so you know,
it's not real access.
No. It's like a little bit. It's a little bit more than like, you know, paying to go to a convention and like traveling to the convention and getting to meet them for like 3 seconds while they sign a thing. But it's still, we follow people on Twitter and we think that we like our brains process that as though we have an equal relationship with them.
Yeah,
but
because
we
too are on Twitter.
Yes.
If I am on Twitter, then, and Chris Evans is on Twitter, obviously we're married. Like, you know, that's how it works.
Yeah.
Reciprocity.
The YA author Jennifer Lynn Barnes, who is also a psychologist, she wrote a really interesting article on parasocial relationships, which is this is what gets us invested in fictional characters who obviously do not know that we the reader exist, and
because
it's
they're not real or have no consciousness.
Exactly. But it's also, you know, how we deal with celebrities and how and now that this is trickling down and it's becoming people who are just like normal people on the internet who sort of get you like you think that you have a relationship with them, but they don't know who you are.
Right.
And so it turns into this very one-sided thing.
I saw a person I follow on Tumblr the other day on the street.
Oh.
And I was like,
you.
But she doesn't know who the fuck I am. And I'm sure would find it deeply surprised, deeply weird. It's like, I take all your skincare recommendations. You're great. Also, I looked like ass that day, so I didn't want it to be like, I took all your recommendations. They're garbage. I was actually going to a store she told me about.
Oh, okay.
She's like, nope. I mean, there's that feeling that you know someone.
Mm. And I think that this gets sort of conflated. People, I don't know if it's just the youths. I think it's a lot of people who just have spent so much time online that they forget where the boundaries get drawn.
Yeah.
And you forget to...
Or they think there aren't boundaries because it's the internet.
That too. And so it's... And I mean, we experience a small slice of this as agents.
Yeah.
Where like we are in a very small way sort of have public personae.
Yeah.
And then, you know, people think that they know us based on the things that we tweet.
Yeah. Like, have you ever met Chuck Wendig? You know, he isn't actually the person he is on Twitter.
No.
Neither is Robert Bennett. Actually, Robert Bennett kind of is the person he is on Twitter. But yeah, you know, people sort of think that they know you. But so I guess, you know, where does, you know, is this a good thing for fan culture or is it a bad thing, all this access?
I think it can be both. But I do think that it makes the extreme fringes very loud, which is, of course, the thing that we're seeing sort of all over the culture right now.
All over the culture. God, the culture is garbage.
Yeah.
I did really enjoy Hillary Clinton being like, you know what Trump is? A fucking racist. Let's call a spade a spade.
Yep, that was great.
That was fabulous. And then she went on this, like, Twitter spree, or one of her people went on this Twitter spree of, like, these are all the specific ways in which he has been racist in the many years of his life.
I do have to say, not to, like, make this political, but...
it's our podcast. We can make it whatever we want.
We can do whatever we want. Honestly, the degree to which Hillary Clinton's social media person is really brilliant at their job.
Killing it. Give that bitch a
just,
raise.
Just, like, so good. But it also makes me think, like, yeah, Hillary Clinton knows how to hire the right person for the job.
She does. She does. She also reads The Toast.
Yes.
And actually got a
like
Land Mermaids. She got a Land Mermaids tote bag when they were doing the tote bag.
Nice.
The end. R.I.P. Yeah. The Toast. Well, this is another thing that, you know, I don't even know if it's really the same question, but, you know, we all talk about how much we love The Toast, but The Toast folded.
Yeah.
Because it didn't have enough, like, monetary support. You know, a lot of that was because it didn't have investors, because that was part of their thing. Nicole Cliff put a lot of her own money into it.
Yeah.
But then, you know, they had all those articles about, like, please don't use ad blockers on our site, you know.
Yeah.
To what extent, you know, we're interested in being fans so long as it doesn't, like, cost us. In that way. Because I always thought this with sort of the rise of, like, pirating culture.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we want to have the thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and often fans are also the ones who will buy, you know, the box set as...
It's true.
You know, I don't think my Blu-ray player even works, but I pre-ordered the Captain America Civil War DVD. Fuck yeah, I did.
Yeah, even if I never watch it, I just want to have it on my shelf.
I just
want
to have it.
This is how I feel about the, like, my, like, box set of... Season 2 and Season 3 of Parks and Rec. Like, I don't even know if I've taken the plastic off because it's all on Netflix and I can just watch whatever episode I want. But I wanted to own it.
One of the attractions to me for, like, binge-watching something on DVD rather than on Netflix is because someone had to stand up to change the disc. So it makes me feel less like a failure.
Unless you're, like, sitting on your bed with your laptop in your lap and you can just...
My laptop doesn't have a DVD player because it's too small and shiny. Steam small.
Yes. Small.
Which meant that I got that CD home that I bought the other night. I was just like,
what do I do with this?
My sister has an external DVD player, so at some point I'll just borrow hers. I was just like, why? Why isn't this working? But, so yeah, we get kind of off track, but yeah, that's kind of garbage, the hounding people on Twitter and like, yelling at Mark Gatiss, an actual gay man, about, you know, the choices he's making with a fictional character. I mean, all of his other choices are bad. We can agree plot-wise, but...
I mean, he's no Moffat, but...
True. Actually, I feel like it's too much. We shouldn't lay this blame on Gatiss' door. It's Moffat.
Yes.
Let's focus on the real enemy. Must be stopped. But then, I mean, and then you have all this shit happening to Leslie Jones, you know.
Oh my god,
actual human sunbeam, Leslie Jones. Perfect cinnamon roll. Too good for this world. Too pure. Like, you know, that's sort of like the dark side of access is that, you know, people can actually access your website. And
people can, it's
tweet
unfettered
horrible
access
racist like, shit at you. Like, poor woman. God. She's so amazing.
Yeah, she does not deserve this.
Did you follow her Olympics coverage?
I did not.
It was amazing. There was this one, I think it was when Simone Biles was winning, like, her third medal or something, and Leslie Jones was in the audience because they flew her to Rio.
Yes.
And she's just up in the stands screaming, champions! Champions! I was like, why are you so wonderful? But, I mean, it just makes me, I think that, honestly, like, the thing that sort of bugs me about all this access, or sort of this illusion of access and this sort of like hounding of creators is that it sort of makes fan culture a little bit less interesting in some way. Because the whole point of fan culture and fandom and stuff is to have the characters do the thing that, you know, they're not going to do. Because, you know, the canon is always going to be more conservative than you know, the consumers, you know.
Yeah, especially the kinds of consumers who will go online and write stuff and draw stuff.
Yeah,
the characters.
Yeah.
Like, we're all a little bit over the top in some ways. And, like, that's sort of the beauty of being part of fandom.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that the other thing is that, you know, because the focus is now all on sort of, like, I mean, I'm sure this is, I don't know about this is, if this is, like, a new thing, but, you know, the focus all being on relationships and, you know, who's going to end up with who, I think is, you know, part of this narrowing, and you know, and that's why all the stories are like relationship stories and not like case fic, you know.
A lot of them, it has always sort of been that way, because I remember everyone always complained that you got, you know, like 10 times as many hits on any ship fic as you did on any gen fic, and so I think that has sort of always been the case, but yeah, I think that becomes a very vocal part.
Yeah, it feels sort of more.
Yeah.
You know, it feels like that's the thing that...
And especially when you are trying to fight for something that is worthwhile and necessary.
Yeah.
And then you sort of, like... Some people lose sight of where the line is between, like, we should have more gay relationships on television. But if you don't make this particular character gay, then you're homophobic.
If these two particular characters aren't gay together.
Yes.
When, you know, emphasizing, you know, these particular characters being gay, you know, erases all kinds of other stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, I think it's always two white boys. It's always two white boys kissing. You know? We were joking about it earlier, but, I mean, that's...
Yeah.
Steric on Teen Wolf?
Mm.
Like... They barely had any screen time together. And most of that was actually just, like, one of them, like, punching the other, like, slamming him up against a wall and, like, not in a hot way. Mm. But, like, you know, there's hundreds of thousands of stories about them. Or wanting to have sex with each other and you know,
and
being
not.
Thwarted in some way. But, and, you know, half is, you know, I don't know where I was going with that, but just have feelings, damn it.
Have lots of feelings.
So many feelings.
And this is our podcast, and we can talk about what we
talk
want.
Talk about them. There was actually
Doesn't
a thing.
Even count?
There was actually a thing a while back where people were adding fanfic to Goodreads, so that they could, I guess, like
you could keep the count,
keep
up.
Reviews of it. I'm just like, that's what the comments on AO3 are for, you dummies. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
I still sometimes get reviews on my fanfiction.net posts.
I didn't know that you still had one. Oh my god, Bridget, you had to link it to me.
It's not terribly interesting.
Mine's not terribly interesting either. I have one finished story up on AO3. And then I'm sure if you tried really hard, you could find the ones that I posted on LiveJournal a million years ago.
Yeah.
I realized it was over 10 years ago.
Oh my god. It was not that long for me. It was like 7 years ago.
What are we going to do about the youths?
I don't really have an answer. It's also very weird to like consider ourselves not the youths.
Oh my god. I realized that I was not the youth when Star Wars came out, and I was just like, all I could feel was like a bone deep exhaustion. I was just like, I don't care. This is a place I once lived, but I don't want to be there anymore.
I feel that way.
I had to mute it on Tumblr.
Oh no. I feel that way about the new Harry Potter.
Oh yeah. Although that one, like, I've actually found pretty easy to avoid because
yeah, it's not omnipresent.
Yeah, because I feel like all the people that I know that are fans of it are just sort of like looking at it, you know, with our knitting needles and our rocking chair going like, what? What is this? Get off my lawn, J.K. Rowling. I don't care that you made this lawn. Get off of it.
I also find it very sad that I don't have that passion anymore.
Well, I think that, you know, you have passion for the original books.
Yeah.
I don't think it's wrong to not be into, like, it's not even J.K. Rowling. It's written by someone else.
I feel...
I'll get excited when she writes something else, you know?
Yeah. I feel a certain sense of loss that there's a new Harry Potter story, and I just don't care.
But again, it's not really a Harry Potter story. It's like, I don't know. It's like the extended universe in Star Wars. It's licensed writing.
I know, but still, it's like a part of my identity has faded away. That's how I feel.
It got turned into a Horcrux. And now you have to destroy it.
I didn't murder anyone, Jen. God.
That's what you think. Just took a very strange turn. Jigorby, I'm very tired.
Are you possessing me? Is that what's going on here?
Anyway. Possession by A is by it. Yeah, I don't know. But then, you know, there's sort of also the flip side, the sort of J.K. Rowling conundrum, if you will, of like, this is too much information. Like, you can't retroactively make your story more diverse.
Yeah.
Like, that's not cool.
I think we already talked about this.
I feel like we can talk about it again, because it was still stupid.
Sure. Same thing. Yeah, I feel like sometimes she's genuinely trying to make things better for readers. Like, if someone's like, there was no one like me in Hogwarts, but could I still go? And she's like, yes, of course. Like, it's just, there's... Yeah. Anyone can go. And that's sort of like...
But then all these other people were also this. It's like,
that's not actually helpful.
Stop retconning your own. You wrote a really white book, JK. Just deal with it. So we killed about 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Good job, us.
We wanted to talk a little bit about... Did you want to talk about what happened at Worldcon?
Yes. Well, so the sort of real life component of the sort of access Twitter debacle is, you know, in real life what people expect from authors. And Sheree Priest wrote this really long Twitter string about how she doesn't tour anymore. Because she just had too many uncomfortable encounters with fans. But at WorldCon there was an incident where an author was approached by someone that they had previously had, you know, really a really uncomfortable encounter with, and at the previous con they had, you know, sort of a do not contact order. And then those people approached this author again and just sort of like kept approaching, seemingly in the guise of trying to apologize, and then they tried to like get physical with one of the author's friends that was trying to defend them, and it was just really uncomfortable and terrible for everybody. And so it can definitely manifest itself, like, in real life as well, which is one of the more sinister parts.
Yes. It becomes very immediate and terrifying when people show up in places where you are. That's happened to me, where, like, I tweeted that I was going to a thing and someone came and was like, I wanted to meet you and pitch you my book. And I was like, that's really terrifying. Don't do that.
What thing was this?
It was actually a YPG event, and it was meant for agents and editors who were part of YPG.
Right, I remember that.
Like, but it was it was supposed to be for writers who were also in publishing, and this person was not, and just sort of like came. And so then it
what'd
became
you do?
Very weird. Just kind of like he was not at all inappropriate.
Except
that
for that
time,
he was there.
Except that he was there. And so, you know, I just, like, handled it the way that I would any sort of pitch and just sort of, like, talked to him. The problem is that he still keeps contacting me, like, sending me emails and tweeting at me. And I'm like,
ew.
I didn't like your book.
Bro, just if you're like, listening to this, stop. Don't be weird. Don't make it weird.
You made it weird. You
made it weird.
And, like, I'm generally, it's a very positive, like, pitching is a perfectly fine experience. But
it only takes one.
Yeah.
To ruin it all.
Yep. And then like, once that happens, and this is also when people send, like, negative reactions to rejections, it happens enough, and you sort of start to think that all of them are going to go that way.
Yeah.
And, of course, they don't. And 90% of the responses we get are just, like, perfectly polite. Thank you for getting back to me.
Don't feel the need to respond.
You don't need to do that.
Don't feel the need. It's fine.
It's fine. I will not be offended. And so it's, yeah.
Stop artificially inflating my query account inbox status.
Yeah, so this is just part of why, like, as soon as it gets into real life, it gets particularly terrifying.
Oh yeah,
because it's like, oh, they found me. They can.
Well, and that's the other part of the. That's the other thing about the Twitter thing is that, like, the internet is real life. I think that's the other thing that, you know.
Yeah.
It used to be that that there was a pretty separate distinction. Like,
yeah.
There was LiveJournal when I went home to my computer, and then there was everything else.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't, you know, carry it around with me.
Yeah.
But now you can.
Twitter is always in my pocket.
It's always in my pocket.
And it's, you know. I sort of have to be on Twitter to find clients and promote my clients.
Every so often I think about, like, quitting, and then I'm like, what would that accomplish, you know?
It wouldn't
help anything.
No. It's saying just like, oh, don't be on the internet.
It's
like,
dumb. We're
dumb.
On the internet.
Can't do that. Everyone is on the
Pandora's
internet.
Pandora's box is open.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that barn door done been opened. The
yep.
horses are out. The internet horses. Someone catch the internet horses before they burn down the village. I don't know. I'm so tired. This isn't gonna be any more coherent than the last one. But so I don't know. WorldCon was fun. Although it was funny because everyone was walking around going like, I'm so tired. Like, on day one, everyone was just exhausted already and ready for it to be over.
I remember a World Fantasy last year. I had, like, brought my bathing suit, and I was like, I'm going to go swimming, and I'm going to do all these things. And instead, every afternoon, I went and took a nap.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's kind of essential.
Are you going to World Fantasy this year?
I'm not, no.
So we have a question from an Anon on email. She says, Anon me, please. I shall answer this Anon. Sorry.
That was great. I love that.
We're doing great. Yes. Thank you so much for this podcast. You're welcome. Yay. It has been such a joy, and I'm constantly sending writers who have become jaded in the publishing world to you to show that you are real and awesome people who are kindred spirits.
Oh, thank you.
My question for you is this. I am an agented but yet unpublished and currently working on... I am agented but yet unpublished and currently working on rewrites of my novel. I have an opportunity to meet with an editor I greatly admire. Would this be a weird thing for me to do since this is in my agent's hands and the book in question is so far from being ready to send out? Or is any connection a good connection? Thanks, Anon.
I think it depends on the circumstances of meeting with them.
It depends on the circumstances of meeting. Because if you are... If it's a situation where you're, like, going to be at a party and you're just going to meet them and it's very casual, like, that's fine.
Go for it.
But, like, if you have an opportunity to meet them at, like, a conference and you pitch them, that would be weird.
Yeah, I wouldn't, like, schedule a pitch session with them. I think that would be very weird because, like, if they request it and you're like, okay, my agent will send it to you in 6 months when it's done being
And also, revised. You know, this is the one area where I ask my clients to, like...
Yeah.
You know, trust my judgment
mm-hmm.
because I might not want to send it to that editor. I may know that someone else at that house is absolutely dying to have a book exactly like the one you wrote.
Yes.
And then if you send it to this person because you promised,
then you might lose that opportunity.
You might lose that opportunity. So.
But on the other hand, if it's just going to be like at a party, or even if it's at a conference, but not like informally at lunch or whatever,
yeah,
go for it. Absolutely make that connection. Just be like, I really admire the work that you do. I particularly love this book that you edited.
Yeah. Keep it general, because you know, they may be helpful down the line, but you know.
And you can always say, and like, if they will probably ask you like,
what are you writing on?
And then you can say, oh, I'm working on this thing. I'm with this agent, and they might say, oh, that sounds really interesting.
And then your answer is like, oh, well, I'll let my agent know. And when she's putting the list together,
thanks so much for being interested.
Yeah,
and I'll let my agent know.
Yeah, because then you know. You don't lose any face because they know it's your agent's job to actually make the submissions. So
and this way you're also not putting any pressure on them, so you can make the connection without them like feeling concerned about whether or not you're going to pitch them, whether or not they have to respond to this. Like, you can just say, oh, I really enjoy these books that you work on. Blah, 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 nice conversation, friendly, like, oh, great, we like each other, this is wonderful. And you can even just, like, you don't even necessarily have to say that you have a book you're working on and have an agent. You can just tell your agent you met them at this conference or this party or whatever, and your agent can then decide if she wants to pitch them, put that in the email and be like, you met my client so-and-so at such-and-such conference, and she really enjoyed talking with you, so I wanted to send this book your way.
Yes. So I think that that's all the questions we have, because we can't figure out if we answered that other one already. What are you reading?
I just finished Bring Up the Bodies.
I haven't read it yet. No spoilers. No spoilers for Tudor England.
Evelyn dies.
No! My fave!
Well, this might count as a spoiler, but I mean, it's just as interesting as Wolf Hall. It's really just fascinating. Might count as a spoiler, but Hilary Mantel takes no stance on whether Anne Boleyn did what she was accused of, which I really liked. I thought that worked really well, because it's not a story about like innocence or guilt. It's a story about power and how power is manipulated, and how this woman was sort of, she was caught up in her own machinations, but also in what the people around her wanted and what they wanted to do. And so that was, I towards the end of the book, I was like, I don't know what Hilary Mantel thinks about whether she was innocent or not.
Yeah.
And I prefer it that way. I think it would have been cheapened if she'd taken a stance.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really cool. I really enjoyed that.
Cool.
What are you reading, Jen?
I am about 75 pages from the end of How to Cook a Wolf.
Okay.
Which is a book of essays that's sort of nominally about, like, economy and cooking. It's by M.F.K. Fisher.
Okay.
But it's actually about sort of, like, how to live well within straitened circumstances.
Cool.
Kind of. Debbie recommended it. And it's really, really interesting. And sort of, like, you know, is the wolf metaphorical or is the wolf, like, actual? We don't know. But
does it tell you how to prepare and cook a wolf?
No, but it's got really great, like,
alas,
chapter titles. Like, you know, one of them's called, like, How to Boil Water. And it's about soup. It's like making soup.
Cool.
And, of course, all the recipes are horrifying because it was, like, written between World War I and World War II.
Oh, my God.
And this is, like, the revised edition that was in the 50s. So, like, it's all horrifying. There's, like, 5 ounces of heavy cream, you know, add mushrooms, stir, like, die of arterial hardening. But it's really interesting. I also started reading Austenland, which is by one of my boss's clients. So,
it's cute.
It's very cute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. The movie is also very cute.
The version I have is the movie tie-in edition with, you know, Brett from Flight of the Conchords kind of, like, glowering on the cover. It's pretty fabulous.
Yes. But it's also, just, like, random comment, the movie edition was produced by Stephanie Meyer, which I think is awesome. Like,
wait.
Twilight Stephanie Meyer?
Wait, she produced the movie?
Yeah. She has, like,
taken
her vast fortune from Twilight and turned it into, like, helping other female creators get things made.
Bless.
Like, this is amazing. Like, suddenly
Barry
I love
never
her.
Told me this. I'm going to have to fact check this before I, you know.
It's 100% true. Go for it.
That is amazing. Bless. Bless her heart.
I love it.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Next on my list to read is finishing Six of Crows. Because I have not finished it yet.
You
I somehow
should.
Realized
How
that my edition,
did you get?
And like, then, halfway through.
And then you just stopped?
Well, because I realized that my edition is, like, a first edition, and so then I became a little paranoid about, like, carrying it around.
Yeah.
And it's such a beautiful That's book fair. That I just, you know.
With the, like, black edges.
It's so great.
It's so cool.
But I am going to finish it before the Crooked Kingdom comes out, so.
I might try to get an arc of Crooked Kingdom again. My client is going on tour with her, so I can email Macmillan and be like, hey, I need to read this for professional reasons.
Totally professional.
Yeah. I'm about to read Where We Belong by Emily Giffen. I've never read her before, but one of my brand new clients who I just signed, she compared her book to Where'd You Go, Bernadette and Where We Belong by Emily Giffen. I was like, I love Where'd You Go, Bernadette. I have not read this other book.
I have not read Where'd You Go, Bernadette either.
It's fabulous. It's really smart and funny and sharp. And it's epistolary, which I love. And it's the kind of thing where, like, you can see... So it's all these letters and emails and notes between Bernadette, who has, like, gone missing in the Antarctic, and all of the people around her in her life compiled... together by her daughter, her, like, teenage daughter, who's like, my mother just vanished and I need to know where she went, hence the title. And so you can see both why everyone around her kind of hates Bernadette, but also you love her and want to be friends with her and you think she's amazing. And so it handles this balance really, really well.
Sounds charming.
It's very charming. So I highly recommend that. Also, it was a massive bestseller a couple years ago, so...
Yeah.
It was one... I gave that to my mom for Christmas.
And then you read it first.
I read it first. Well, I bought it because I had read it, and I was like, either my mother will love this or hate this.
Or hate it, yeah.
And I'm not entirely sure. And she loved it, and I was so glad.
Relieved. My mom doesn't have time to read it anymore, or she does read, and then she falls asleep. So.
Yeah, my mom reads, like, 5 pages at a time. And, you know, my mom's a real estate agent. She works, like, 18 hours a day. And so she gets down, sits down in bed and reads 5 pages and falls asleep. And then the next day has to reread the last 2 pages because she doesn't remember them.
So she really reads 3 pages at a time.
Whenever I can give her something that she really loves, I'm really happy about it.
Nice. Well, on that note, thank you again for listening. Thank you for your comments and questions, even though you haven't been sending a lot of them.
Have we answered all of the problems in publishing?
We solved all the problems. Now on to world peace.
Yes.
What's the next book club book?
Warrior's Apprentice?
Warrior's Apprentice is the next Kozukin Saga book.
I will say I saw one of my clients tweeting about it yesterday, and apparently she loves Miles, so I guess we might like him too.
I guess we have to soldier
on.
So we're going to be recording that eventually, and if you like the podcast, let us know. Send us your comments and suggestions and thoughts, and please rate and review us on iTunes so that we can grow fancier by the day.
Yes.
Next time, maybe we can buy the
$15 bottle of wine.
The $15 bottle of wine. Ooh.
Getting lush here.
Indeed. And on that note, bye.